5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Scott Young is the Wall Street Journal best-selling author of Ultra Learning. He is a podcaster, a computer programmer. He is an avid reader. His newest book is Get Better at Anything, 12 Maxims for Mastery. Welcome back to the show, Scott.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's been a little while, so refresh our memory. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Yeah, I think it's been like almost about 5 years maybe since Ultra Learning came out, which is it's crazy to think about. But yeah, since then, I've become a father twice. I have a four-year-old and a one-year-old. And I spent a good chunk of that 5 years just reading hundreds of books and academic papers and things like that to prepare for this book. You know, just the topic continues to fascinate me, and I wanted to provide a nice sequel for Ultra Learning, dig deeper into some of these ideas that I was able to begin touching on in that book.
Awesome. All right. So are you a good dad?
I'd like to think so. I mean, I think there's always more that we could do as fathers. And, you know, certainly when you're starting out, you're figuring out, like, how do you put on the diaper? How do you do everything you have to do? And then by the time you're round number two, you're like, you know how to get them to sleep in your arms, this kind of thing. So I'd like to say I'm a good dad, but I mean, time will tell. I think they each go through phases as they're growing up. And so you deal with different challenges when they're little babies than when they're teenagers, for instance.
Yeah, for sure. So I've got a 7-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 10-month-old, and I've gotten a little bit better.
Got the gamut.
I've gotten a little better every time.
Definitely.
How many parenting books?
At the very least.
or apathetic. So.
Yeah.
How many parenting books did you read, if any at all?
Yeah, I mean, I did read, like, especially before the first one, you read a bunch of parenting books. And I remember reading the one about, like, getting them to sleep on a schedule. which when with my first son, so my firstborn, he was a really good sleeper. And so my wife and I are like patting ourselves on the back of like, well, you know, we did everything right. You know, we were following the schedule. You know, you just have to follow the schedule. Yeah. And then my daughter came around and she was like, you know, I love her to death, but she was not one for sleeping through the night for about the first year. And it was like, okay, all right, maybe it was just the kid. And so you do have some of these humbling moments. My grandmother, she had 6 kids. And I remember her like a quote from her was, before she had any kids, she had 6 theories of parenting and 0 kids. And then after, she had 0 theories of parenting and 6 kids. So I think that's just how it is sometimes. But I mean, you definitely, you learn your approach, you learn your style, how you like to handle things. And I think, I mean, parenting is just one of the big undertakings that at least some of us do in life. And it's, you want to do it well, right?
Yeah, I'm interested. Certainly, obviously, the title of your book is Get Better at Anything. So whatever I do and I commit to doing, I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Am I interested in getting good at everything? I am interested in getting good at everything that I do. How do you think about that? Better versus good?
I mean, for me, part of the, like, I mean, when you write books like these, you go through all these different titles and you're like fine split these nuances of like, you know, do I want to put the word mastery in the title? Because mastery can also be kind of like off-putting and like it's too big. Or do you want to put learning, but learning sounds too much like school. And so you go back and forth and you're like, you have all these like endless conversations where you repeat the word so many times. It's like, you know, if you say the word muffin, 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 and then it just becomes sounds. So... titling a book is a kind of like this weird process where you think about it more than almost anyone else does. And for me, the Get Better at Anything, the reason I was drawn to that title is because to me, the idea of mastery or the idea of like reaching the apex of a profession. I mean, there's been lots of books written like that. Anders Ericsson wrote the book Peak, very good book, but it's like peak, clearly the top. This is the best, right? And the thing that I found from talking to people is that, you know, the best is daunting, but being better is approachable. And I think the only way you get to be the best is by just continually being better. And so they're not opposed goals, but I think better, it shows the sort of immediacy of what we're dealing with. And so in this book, I really wanted to focus on where you are right now. How do you get better? What's the next thing you need to do? What's the thing that you need to do to move forward? And that also brought out a lot of interesting ideas of the research too, because there's a lot of research showing that like what works well when you're a beginner doesn't work as well when you're an expert. And so if you're reading a book that's like, how do you, you know, be better than Tiger Woods at golf, it's going to focus on a different set of advice than like, you know, I'm a real duffer on the green. How do I get a little bit better at golf so I'm not embarrassing myself at the business meeting or something. And so I wanted this book to be more in the line of for someone who has a skill, could be their work, could be hobby, could be just something they care about. How do you get better? How do you get past that sort of stuck point? I wanted it to focus on that.
Well, I appreciate that. So your book is a beautifully written, clearly well-researched book.
Well, thank you.
Do you consider yourself to be a good writer, a great writer? How do you think about that?
I think the moment I think the moment you think of yourself as a great writer is a dangerous, dangerous time, because then you're no longer focusing on the craft. So I always leave these kinds of judgments of my first year. Like, that's for the reader to decide. You can read this and be like, I think this guy's a genius. Or you can read this and be like, what a hack. And you know what? I leave that judgment to you. I don't try to have that self-perception. For me, it's always, again, that kind of like, yeah, that first term of that getting better. And so when I was writing this book, all of my attention was focused on like, what did I do well in the last book that I can kind of expand on and build upon? And one of the things for this book I recognize is that like with the first one I wrote, it was more personal. Like there was little sections that were a little bit more memoir-like as my own personal experiences. And for this one, I wanted to try to move beyond that as a writer where I wasn't, you know, leaning on my own opinion so much. And it turns out when you don't lean on your opinion so much, you got to read a lot. You got to do a lot of research. Like if everything you want to say, you want to back up with something, that takes a lot more work. And so it was a real journey. But I think at the end, I like where the end product came up. I feel like, you know, I hope you read the book And it feels like, oh, this guy actually did some reading. He didn't just say, well, this is what I think about learning based on thinking about it for half an hour.
Yeah, well, I think that that's certainly clear. So are you going to make that mistake again, or is the next book going to be based on your opinion?
I don't know. I don't know whether it's a mistake. It's a different style.
I'm just kidding.
You know, like, I like the personal memoirs too, but I think just when you're writing, you decide, like, this is my vision for how I want to do it, and then you work on it. So yeah, no slight to the people who, you know, they've been through some interesting things and they want to say what they think.
For sure. All right. So you mentioned that Ultra Learning came out 5 years ago. When did you make the decision to write another book? Are you always known as a writer? And how did you settle on this topic?
I mean, I don't know. I think writing a book and then publishing it, like, there's something kind of addicting about that. I know very few people that wrote a book, unless it went like, just was a complete disaster, they're like, oh, I never want to write another book again. Even if it was like really painful, you're just like, oh no, I want another one. And so I think the ideas started turning immediately. Now this book, and I think this is like the challenge of writing book number two, is that with book number one, you've been kind of building up your whole life to it. Like, every life experience, thing you've learned, idea, actionable wisdom, this kind of stuff, you find some way to fit that in book number one. And then book number two, you're like, okay, now clean slate, starting from scratch again. And so it's a very different kind of process. And so, as I said, like, the first book was more personal, more kind of like, you know, seen through my lens of how I see things. And this book was a little bit more like, you know, what are the things I'm missing? What are the things that I don't understand? And so, again, it just, I started doing research. I had the book went in many different directions until it crystallized and like, okay, this is the framework of like how I want to make sense of it. And, you know, it's a very interesting process working on a new book where you're like, okay, I don't want to just be repeating myself and just saying the same things over and over again.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I got this phrase stuck in my head of, well, I don't even know if it's a phrase. I've spent some time thinking about the throwaway line of just do it. And it's such a great iconic term, but you tell somebody to just do it, but I don't know how. So you're trying to get better at something. Well, just go and do it. So I love your book so much because it does break it out into, you need to be able to see it happen. You need to actually do it. You need to get feedback.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Feedback, and then you break out these 12 maxims. And you mentioned a minute ago, unless it was really painful, then you probably don't want to do it again. One of your maxims deals with the value or the problem of difficult things. Yeah. So I wanted to sort of pull on that and hear more from you about, does getting better require sacrifice pain?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. So I definitely think learning requires effort. So getting good at something requires attention and effort. So I'm definitely not here to sell the book of like, you know, here's how you can learn in your sleep or something like that, right? Like there's definitely people that have that idea, but that's not my intention. I think you know, in order for you to like learn anything, you got to be paying attention to it. In order to improve on a skill, you need to be focusing. So I do think those are important, but are those painful? I think it depends, you know? And I think there's definitely people who can talk about their sort of entry into a skill or a field, and it's just, you know, it's exciting, it's challenging, it's joyful. Like the example I like to use of like the positive case of learning is like when you get really obsessed, when someone gets really obsessed with like a video game, right? Like mm-hmm. it's just designed to be immersive and you just get sucked in and like, oh, and 100 hours have gone by and you've been playing this whole time, right? And then you have the opposite example of like, you know, being in the classroom and like watching the clock tick down. And so in my mind, learning and getting better at things often involve difficulty. They almost always involve effort, but whether or not they involve pain, whether or not they are like, you know, this is just agonizing versus this is a joy, I think really depends on, you know, a lot of the factors. Now, can you always avoid pain? Can you always avoid things being difficult? I don't think so. Sometimes you're just going to have to get through that boring part to get to something exciting, or sometimes you're going to have to deal with like your own insecurities or fears. I have a whole chapter talking about that at the end. But at the same time, I think there's lots of, you know, difficulties we face in learning, things that we struggle with that are maybe unnecessary. They're maybe, you know, they come up just because of the environment, but if we could have a different environment, we would learn better.
That's a great point. As I was reading through it, I thought, well, how many things in my life that I've learned and gotten good at have been easy? And so many of them have been physical endeavors, like getting good at a sport.
Yeah.
And a lot of that does require physical discomfort. If you want to get stronger, it's by the very nature of it. But the video game example is excellent because that's just fun. So it doesn't need to be painful, but does require effort and focus.
But I mean, even sports, like I know, like, you know, you can get in situations where something that is like physically taxing is nonetheless like really exciting. Like, I don't know, you can probably think of sports that you just like, you maybe you just caught on to it, but you just like really liked it from day one. Like for me, I've liked skiing, like downhill skiing, from the first day I did it. And I was really bad. I'm still not even that good. Like I'm not like some world-class skier, but even from the first day where I didn't know how to turn and I just had to fall in order to like switch directions, I was having a blast. And so I think, you know, it's, yeah, I would fall, I'd hurt myself, I would, you know, there'd be physical strain, my body would be sore after. So undoubtedly that's part of it. But I think sometimes the conditions are set up so that, yeah, you're really going to enjoy something, you're going to naturally have it work. And then other times you're going to hit little obstacles, you're going to hit little roadblocks. So to me, understanding the principles of learning, understanding all this work that researchers, cognitive scientists have done to understand how learning works, they're to give you an extra tool so that when you do get stuck or when you do encounter difficulties that would make you give up, you can say, well, maybe I could try this, or maybe this is the problem, you know?
Yeah. I appreciate all that. So if I wanted to become a power lifter, that's it's a lot of things, but I need to physically build muscle. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to become a great video game designer, it's more of an intellectual pursuit. Mm-hmm. And if I wanted to get good at meditation, maybe that's intellectual, but also a little spiritual. Yeah. Is it, are they all the same?
Well, I mean, they're definitely different. Like building muscle and building knowledge or skills, there's obviously similar principles, you know, practice what we were talking about, a lot of these things, but there's also key differences too. You know, I even have a whole chapter talking about some of those differences between like building muscles and building intellectual abilities. But I think that, the focus of the book is definitely a little bit more on the intellectual end. Part of that is just because already get better at anything is like such a broad topic. Like you could write an entire book about one of the particular sub, like I could have written an entire book about just like pilot training. Like I read entire books about pilot training in the book. Like I don't want to write an entire book about pilot training, especially not flying a plane myself. But you know, you could focus entirely on like how to become a good doctor, how to become a good writer, or one of these things. So already just taking the intellectual gamut, you're covering a good base. But sometimes they are interleaved. Like if you're, again, learning a sport, there's an intellectual, there's a cognitive component, and there's a physical one. So, you know, if you are golfing, for instance, I know Tiger Woods was kind of famous for like being one of the first golfers to like start lifting weights. You know, it used to be just like kind of paunchy older white guys who are like, ah, you know, whatever, I'll just hit the club. And then Tiger Woods is like, no, this is a sport, I'm going to be athletic about it and actually like build some muscle so I have more powerful drives. And that's become a thing now. But at the same time, you know, the part of his body that's like controlling the swing, that's determining whether he hits the ball correctly and stuff. That's all happening in your brain. That's all kind of an intellectual thing. It's not intellectual in the way we think of academics, but it's an intellectual thing. So those rules, those principles for learning in that domain definitely apply. So I think intellectual development actually covers quite a bit of what we want to get good at when we're getting good at things. Even powerlifting is quite a bit mental, I think.
No, I think that that's right. So to sort of circle back on your writing process, you just talked about how you wrote or you read books on pilot training and do you have a sense of how many books you read or how much time you spent researching for this book?
Couple years for sure. So I keep a little document. Now it's not entirely exhaustive because sometimes when I would be in the middle of writing a chapter, I would go directly to research some points and then I wouldn't necessarily log it. But when I was doing more survey research, like I don't know how I'm going to use this yet, I kept a pretty detailed note system. And every time I would read a new book, I'd put it in this file system. So I'd have like all my notes. So if I have to go back to that book, I don't have to read through every page. And I think I had at the end of the sort of process of writing this book, I think I had about 110 books and maybe 150 books. And then I had about 500 to 600 papers. So I have like a folder with all these like PDFs of papers I downloaded. So not all of that made into the book. Sometimes you read things and you're just like, okay, that's interesting, but it doesn't slot in, probably most of it. But in other cases, you know, you just, I think the nice thing about doing such a broad survey is that my goal with writing this book was to not be like overly narrowly focused, not to be like, well, this is a cool study and then I'm going to blow that up and say that applies to everything. Instead to be like, here's a theme that you can see in like these three different places and this is how the picture fits together. So, you know, one of these central concepts that comes up early in the book is this idea of cognitive load theory and cognitive load. And like, you can see it running through examples of, you know, people doing science fiction writing and then also the pilot example and then, you know, people doing poker playing and intuition. So you can see this kind of same sort of broad idea play out in different facets. And so that's what I was hoping to try to do with the book, is to synthesize what otherwise would be research in a fairly specific domain, a specific field, and bring it across so that, you know, hopefully you can see the big pictures, you know, between fields that maybe you wouldn't otherwise look into.
Was it easy or obvious to come up with 150 books and 500 papers? If you said you need to go find 100 books on this topic, I'd be like, oh my gosh, I don't even know where to start or how long it would take.
Well, you start with one book on a topic, and then they cite something and you put a little star next to it. And then when you're done the book, you download that and it cites another thing. You star that and you cite that. And so it's this kind of like exponentially growing process. And then at some point you have to cull it. Like I've got like a bookshelf, like maybe 20 books that I bought, but then didn't end up reading because they didn't make the cut of like what had to be read next in the sequence. So that's sort of my process for doing these research, is like, you just start with like, okay, let's get like the top 10 textbooks on like learning and memory and cognitive psychology, or and then you're in one book and you realize, oh, they're talking about pilot training and how there's all this research on like flight simulators, and that's kind of interesting maybe for this reason. And then you download like too many papers on like how people learn with flight simulators, and then you go further and then you're like, okay, that's enough flight simulators, and then you're in the Renaissance learning about artistic education. And so it is this kind of blooming, expanding, growing process that, I mean, it takes a lot of time, but it's also exciting because you go in, you know, I remember reading a book that was talking about like how Pacific Islanders used mnemonic systems to like navigate the oceans. I'm like, you never would have thought of that if you had just started with like, I wonder how those outrigger canoes got across the ocean. But I mean, you know, that's how you end up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Start pulling those threads. And okay. So yeah. It takes you however long it takes you to read that many books and to actually not just read, but then digest and everything else. Yeah. What about the actual act of writing?
I mean, the writing, I find that like the problem with writing is that in some ways the difficult part is getting yourself to the point where you're ready to write. I mean, for this kind of book, I think there's definitely, I write a blog and I have definitely written essays that have more of a like, well, here's an idea, and then I'm going to just start like free associating things that I think about that idea. But for this kind of book, you know, the first challenge was like, what do I even think about this, right? So as I said, you read this wide variety of stuff, and then you have to try to be like, what is the major patterns? What is the major like important points? Like, what would I want to distill from this idea? And what's interesting too? And then the writing part is, I think, this sort of refining process. So you're sort of like, I know I want to write a chapter about, you know, as I said, like I have a chapter where it's like, I know I'm going to talk about like poker players and how people get good at playing poker, right? But then you're like, I don't have enough detail of to like make this flesh out. So then you buy a few books reading about the history of poker and this kind of stuff, and you go back and forth and sculpt it until you get to a point where you feel like you don't need to add anything. You've said what you want to say. So I definitely think the approach to writing that I took, at least for this book, was, you know, for every paragraph I wrote, there was probably like 100 times the amount of effort to like figure out what that was going to be in that book.
Did you know that you were done at a certain moment, or was it always like somebody had to rip it out of your hands?
I mean, well, I knew I was done when it was the deadline to hand in my manuscript. That's just a bit of a joke. But I mean, for me, after I'd written it, I was usually satisfied. It was just getting it to a place of writing. So there was like a lot of early drafts of the book where I was going in a different direction. So I like when I began the research process, my bird's eye view of everything was different than, you know, after like 100 books later, you see sort of like, this seems important versus this seems to be a minor thing, and then it shifts and this kind of stuff. And so, I mean, there's probably chapters of the book that I wrote like 5 or 6 times, because you write it one way and then you're like, wait a minute, no, this is actually a better example of this and this kind of thing. And so, I mean, at some point you just pull it all together and you hope people like it as a book, but the sort of the process of assembling it, I think that's the real intellectual work of like figuring out, what do I actually even think about this? And what is all of this stuff that I've read? What is it saying to me?
Yeah. Well, I love it. Well, I know that you've got your work cut out for you as as the book is now live and in the world. So I'm sure that you've got a very full dance card. What is next?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, right now, I'm very much focused on getting word out of this book that I've spent, you know, a number of years of my life putting together. But I think, for me, I'm excited to go back to practice. Like, I'm excited to, you know, I've been spending so long writing and thinking about the ideas. And I mean, as you know, from like ultra learning, I kind of got my start less theoretically oriented, but like learning skills and trying to abstract from that. So I'm excited to return to that. I'm excited to go back to like, okay, I've spent so long learning this, you know, doing another big project, doing something where I might try to get better at something myself that's important. So I think I'm hoping that people who read the book are in the same frame of mind that I am of, okay, how do we use this?
Let's put it to work. Love it.
Yeah.
Well, Scott, thanks so much for coming back on. Thank you for all of your work in bringing Get Better at Anything to life. Where can people get their copy and how can they learn more about you?
Yeah, sure. Well, the book is available Amazon, Audible, wherever you get your books from. They can also check out my website, scotthyoung.com. I have a free newsletter there. I've got tons of essays on learning, habits, productivity, self-improvement, all these kind of topics. So, you know, if you've enjoyed this, you want to dig a little deeper into some of the ideas, then feel free to go there. Thank you.
Love it. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Scott your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Get your copy of Get Better at Anything wherever you buy your books, certainly Amazon. I will link that in the notes of the show. And again, it's Get Better at Anything, 12 Maxims for Mastery. And then go to scotthyoung.com. And I can 100% attest to the quality and the readability and the insight of the blog. It is an awesome and must read every time. Thanks again, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
Till next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think advertising on TikTok isn't for your business, think again.
With TikTok ads, we went from 250,000 downloads to over 1 million downloads in less than a year.
I'm Eve.
I'm Anam, and we're the co-founders of Alinea.
Alinea Invest is an investing app for Gen Z.
We run 50 new ads per week with 3 variations thanks to TikTok Smart Plus campaigns. If you're not advertising on TikTok, you're missing out.
Drive more app downloads only on TikTok. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
You've finally broken loose from work. 3 friends, 1 tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.